Who are you and what are you doing?
Great to be here. Thanks for the invite. Real privilege to be on RegTech Impact. My name is Charlie Dellingpole, and I am the founder of a company called Comply Advantage. So arguably it's a regulatory technology company. So we help companies with money laundering, terrorist financing, and other massive regulatory problems. So I started the company 6 years ago. We're now 250 people, and we've raised now something like $90 million. So it's kind of scaled reasonably well so far, but still just the beginning.
Wow. But how to be, or can I say that in a better way? I know you very well, and I know you are a serial entrepreneur. But how to be a super successful serial entrepreneur? Can you describe that? I mean, you just told about yourself very, how you can say, in a British way, not too much about what you reached. Can you tell me more about why you are a super successful serial entrepreneur? Can tell that. I know that you have to do a lot of things.
I think we should be more ambitious, right? I think if we compare ourselves to companies in the US, like, Google, Amazon, Facebook, the companies in Silicon Valley, I think I still have a long way to go, right? I think in terms of like size, scale, IPO, I think okay so far, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I was like everywhere where I wanted to be, right? I think I'm still kind of early on the journey.
That's a good question answer, because I asked my audience or the people who I should interview or who I should do a podcast with. And Charlie, your name dropped many times, by the way. That means for me, you are a super successful RegTech entrepreneur also. But can you tell me about your, what did you do? I mean, you started with 16, I can remember, with student room, I think, or a room student. Can you tell me that?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess when I was 16, I thought the internet and computers would be important. And so part of that, I just got tons of books on programming and software, and I taught myself how to build websites and code, and I launched various things, and they kind of did reasonably well. And so the first one was a kind of student website. It was kind of 10 separate websites. It had like a discussion area, different links, essays, school homeworks, so just kind of everything that I did as a school child, I guess. And that was kind of very, very popular. And it's still going now, so it's still kind of doing, still has like 100 staff, still kind of has like X million visitors a day. So yeah, it's very popular. And I guess it was a good learning experience in terms of having to build a team, having to hire people, having to do all the accounts and finance. So I guess as a kind of introduction to business, it was good to have that early on.
That's great. But what was your experience? You told me about hiring a team and this kind of experience, what you can use for a RegTech company, Comply Advantage, for example. What can you experience? What are the most three defined experience you can share with us?
So, I mean, I guess after that, I did another company. So I started a fintech company called Market Finance. So we've raised, I think they raised like 50 million or something, or and lent X billion dollars. So that company was a working capital finance marketplace. So we took money off hedge funds, high net worth, family office, and gave it out to lots of small companies. So quite nerve-wracking in terms of if someone comes to you saying, "Hey, give me £1 million," and then the next day you never met them, you wire the £1 million. So that was quite an interesting business. And I think that I started in 2009, so the height of the financial crisis, or at least the last financial crisis before this one, and the banks were all collapsing. There wasn't really any competition to the big banks, so it was super early on in terms of fintech. So what we knew was, so it was something like invoice finance, and then suddenly it became very, very sexy and became fintech, right? So I guess in the same way that when I started Combined Vantage, there wasn't a reg tech space, it didn't exist. Similarly, there wasn't a fintech space back then. And similarly, my first company, it was before Facebook. So I guess you had like Friendster. But I guess one of our investors said, Charlie, you could have won the Olympics. Instead, you won the school egg and spoon race. So yeah, I think it's important to keep in context the size of the wealth creation and companies created in the past 2 years, in terms of like, now 20% of the S&P is Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. Like Apple's now a $2 trillion company. So I think in Europe, we need to keep in mind the level of ambition we require to build real companies.
I mean, to sum it up, the ambitions is very important.
I think, I think those people who are going to think, I'm just going to build a small niche and leave it at that. I think often if you aim for the stars, you might only reach the moon, right? In terms of building a company is so challenging that you need to have a big market. You need to have a powerful model. Otherwise, you're not able to reach anywhere. And I think that kind of escape velocity, as in you need to be able to escape some of the competition or some of the kind of constraints of being small. There could be large incumbents who would try and replicate what you're doing or who have greater distribution than you and therefore could kind of squat you early on. So I think scale is very important. And the last thing you want to do is spend your life running a tiny company that is just you. And effectively you're kind of subsidizing someone else by working on a one-to-one basis. So I think,
Absolutely. What I can say, really interesting, I can sum it up, if maybe true, it's hard working. To be an entrepreneur, it's really hard. Somebody told me it's like eating glasses. Can you say that's true?
Yeah, I think there's the expression, it's like jumping off a cliff and trying to assemble a plane as you're falling in the sky. I think the Elon Musk quote is around eating glass, or if you're going through hell, keep on going, right? So I think there are always kind of maxims and axioms and jokes around how hard it is. I think also fundamentally you have to enjoy it, right? I think temperamentally and psychologically you have to be suited towards like some form of masochism, in terms of I think the volatility and the fear and greed and ambition, like the kind of emotions that will roll over you as things go bad or things go well. But ultimately, it's you and your company that captures all the downside and all the upside. So I think it's quite an emancipatory form of way of living.
Absolutely. That means, because it's a very negative way of being an entrepreneur, and I try to get a more positive way. And I think you do what you like, and that is not like being work anymore. It's like your passion. And I think that it's something interesting, code. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the reason why people who are mission-driven rather than, say, financially-driven succeed is because you need to have a kind of overwhelming passion which can attract a team, can convince clients who might not think you're particularly sustainable to stay with you, and then also convince suppliers, investors. So you have to build a nexus around a company which doesn't previously exist out of thin air. So I think only if you're really convinced of the value that you're bringing to the world. I think if you want to make money, then there's obviously way easier ways to make money, as in you can go and get a job, or you know, like the ROI is a lot faster. I think in the previous three companies I've started, it's always been that I work for free for the first like 3-4 years, or I'm going to put in hundreds of thousands of dollars and risk it myself, right? So at least for me, I've always had to wait a long time for any kind of return. And also you have to labor in obscurity, right? As in you have to go back, at least I did, from leaving JP Morgan. I left a kind of very well-paying job, a kind of very respectable job, and then had to go and work in a very small, decrepit, cheap office and not take a salary. And then similarly, marketing, which I left, had to go and start again. And again, you know, you start with like five people rather than anything. So I think you have to be prepared to labor in obscurity for a long time, and you have to be able to defer gratification, and you have to be completely convinced and be correct. Otherwise, you waste 5 years of your life, or in your prime. So I think, but then I think in terms of entrepreneurship is also the kind of ultimate form of criticism, ability to constructively critique the world in terms of if you think something's wrong or something annoys you about how bad something's done, then go and change it, go and build something better. And with Comply Advantage, I think I saw a really important area in terms of terrorist financing, money laundering, done really, really badly. And it was obvious and annoying to me that there was a much better way. Unfortunately, it was very capital intensive in terms of it would require $100 million to build. But in the end, there was a better way for society to deal with money laundering and terrorist financing. And that's what we built. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Charlie. But what were your first contacts with direct tech industry? What were your first contacts with direct tech industry?
So when I was at Market Finance, I had to oversee the money laundering function. So we were wiring millions of dollars a day around different bank accounts to different countries. And I heard about this thing called money laundering. And I was like, okay, if something goes wrong, then you'll go to jail. And I was like, what? And so you're trying to grow a company, you're trying to deal with the burn, you're trying to raise money, trying to close deals, and at the same time you're like, if something goes wrong here, then you'll personally be fined and personally put in jail. And so it was the bit that I really hated the most. The systems were really terrible, the processes were really terrible. And so my first contact with the reg tech industry was as a consumer of reg tech at my second company, Market Finance.
Cool. I mean, I can say that you have got a really well company and you changed to a difficult area. It's called reg tech industry. And you can say reg tech is difficult. Or what do you think about reg tech in the beginning?
The reason why I chose the problem was because deliberately it was hard, as in it just seemed like a very challenging problem that no one had faced, and therefore it was worth solving. If everyone had solved it, then I wouldn't have bothered because there wouldn't be any kind of need. So that was the rationale. In terms of the broader industry, so I think it's in many respects a kind of misnomer, as in it doesn't really make sense, because the agglomeration of different business models and applications, although they're called regtech, often they have nothing in common, as in they're so disparate and they solve so many different problems that they aren't in competition, and actually there are different needs and use cases. So it's an all-encompassing term that addresses and confronts a range of different underlying problems, but I think they have similar economic properties in that they have to buy them. It isn't core to the business, and therefore it should be often outsourced to a third-party provider, as in it doesn't make sense often to build it yourself. So hence, I think it's an interesting and obviously growing industry. I think particularly in the EU, given the harmonization across all different states, means that there is a need to do things at scale, and therefore you can really invest and build something great to solve these problems.
Mm-hmm. Somebody told me in the regtech industry, you have always two customers. One is your main customer, and the second customer is the regulatory, like here in Germany, the BaFin. Is that true that you need, that's the reason why regtech is so, expensive? As an investor, because you have two customers, the regulatory side, the government side, and the customer side.
Exactly. I think if you contrast it with something like marketing technology, then nobody cares what you're using. You won't get asked what you're using. You won't go to jail if you're using Marketo rather than different software stack. Whereas here, it's the level of circumspection and scrutiny that you go through in order to understand precisely what you're using and how it functions is life or death. And therefore, in a very tangible way, the kind of guts of the back office system get constantly inspected. So you're right to point to a really unique mechanism and dynamic within companies that are regulated. But I think that's for a reason. I think recently you saw with Wirecard. So some of our customers were using Wirecard, and the impact was that people couldn't pay their bills. People who were in hospital had their last paycheck of the month docked. Investors lost billions of dollars. So I think it always comes down to a real tangible loss for society if those companies that are regulated don't do their job. So you're absolutely right. And it's not an anomaly. It's for a very good reason.
And if we just think about the regulatory side, and I have to decide which market I should go in, I think London is maybe an interesting place because they are doing the sandbox, the regulatory sandbox. Which other countries do you think could be interesting for building regtechs? Because we think about the challenge about you have got two customers, one regulators and one your normal customers. And if we think about that, which countries would be the best or which marketplaces are interesting for regtech entrepreneurs?
So speaking from personal experience, we have an office in Singapore and in New York. And so I think those are the most interesting markets to me, at least. Singapore, you have the Monetary Authority of Singapore, which is a combined central bank and regulator. So they have lots of money, which is good. But also they have the ability to wield significant influence. So, and then New York, I think US is obviously a big market financially, but also regulatory dynamics are very interesting in terms of they're very, very complex. So in New York, you have New York State, you have the NYFDS, you have FinCEN, you have the OCC. I think the federal structure, much more so than Germany, means that there's this patchwork of overlapping regulators. So recently they came out with a statement on political exposure, and it came out from like six different regulators. So it's bad enough having one regulator. Imagine having six. So yeah, I think partly what's fascinating about RegTech is that you have this patchwork of different regulators globally. I think within money laundering, it's nice that you have the FATF, Financial Action Task Force, who coordinate it globally. And so there is some harmonization. So a global solution requires a global problem requires a global solution.
Interesting aspect. I mean, we talk about New York, we talk about Singapore, but you and I lived in Europe. What should be changed in Europe regulatory scene, or what if you have the chance to change something in the regulatory area, which topic would you change?
I think with regards, I mean, the one thing that I probably say is Europe's done great work on money laundering. I think the thresholds in terms of political exposure has been so. With the fifth money laundering directive, you had regulations around cryptocurrency. You had regulations around prepaid cards. So the Bataclan attacks in Paris, where they murdered 20 people, from that was financed by prepaid cards. And then after the Mossack Fonseca scandal, whereby all the shell companies were financed from the Caribbean, you had regulation around UBOs. You also had much higher in the sixth money laundering directive. You had regulations around predicate offences. So a much more clear understanding of which offences were linked to money laundering. I guess technology and regulation are where they are because of each other. So with more technology, you can do more things. I'd say what I'd like to see is particularly on adverse media. So in terms of the way companies can screen their clients. So if you look at Jeffrey Epstein, it was well known that Jeffrey Epstein was linked to prostitution and human trafficking, but Deutsche Bank still financed him, right? So I think the EU should stipulate that companies screen their clients for adverse media much more effectively. And that's because technology has advanced. So we at Command Vantage used natural language processing within machine learning to do that. And we think that that's really effective. We can do it in Dutch, we can do it in Italian, we've got all kinds of languages. So I think that should be extended. And also information sharing. On the information sharing front, I think terrorists and money launderers can arbitrage between different companies. And I think if they were allowed to share information as in companies, then that would allow much more protection against those risks.
Absolutely. But we talk about RegTech every time, but I thought about when did you first hear the word RegTech? I mean, RegTech, did you hear the first time?
I think probably, so everything became suffix tech. So fintech, I think 2010 probably it became fintech, as in, I guess everything, there's prop tech, there's insure tech, there's sup tech, like everything has a tech suffix. So reg tech was a really obvious one. And therefore I think probably 2014, as in, I started this company early 2014, probably late 2014. I think companies have now latched onto that very heavily because it implies much higher valuation multiples, and there are all kinds of ramifications in terms of the model you're operating. So yeah, I'd say 2014.
And may I ask you, how do you define RegTech? I mean, can we define RegTech? That's possible. Make the sense.
In terms of the nomenclature and system of naming, I'd say anything to do with regulation and technology, or kind of technology driving regulation. So, what isn't reg tech is humans manually processing paper, as in the kind of old way it was done. I think prior to RegTech, the way it was called was the governance, risk, and compliance framework. So you would have like market overviews, and investment bankers would produce GRC market maps, right? So it exists before RegTech. It was given a different name. So there's always been software companies doing things in this space, but to more closely brand themselves in alignment with Google, Facebook, Amazon, the kind of tech suffix was propagated.
Do you know the RegTech impact definition? I can tell you the RegTech impact definition. RegTech describes the use of modern computer-based digital technology to automate, simplify, and improve regulatory, governance, fraud, compliance, anti-corruption, ethical, and risk tasks.
Yeah, I think it's very thorough.
I think the same. I think that is the best way. But because the next question, what I always think about, or if we talk about RegTech, everybody thinks this is the question is, why RegTech is not a subset of FinTech? Or is this a subset of FinTech? What is your opinion?
I'd say if you were going to draw a Venn diagram, then there is obviously significant overlap. But then I'd say that regulation, so because money is so dangerous and powerful,
it's highly regulated. So often it is linked to fintech, but I think regulation extends to every industry and every geography. So arguably it's much broader and bigger than just fintech. So you can point to, you know, we deal with high risk corporates, right? Or, and I think there, if you look at kind of environmental, social, and governmental risk indicators, every one of those in terms of the way in which you deal with the environment, the way in which you deal with social protocols, like they all involve regulation, but none of them involve finance, right? Like BP and if their rig explodes in the Caribbean, then that isn't to do with finance, right? That's just business. And therefore, RegTech can solve those problems by, say, more accurately measuring the wells and the rigs. So the Venn diagram obviously includes a lot of fintech, but also it's far broader than that. So that's why RegTech isn't a subset of fintech.
Cool. But for example, if we talk about RegTech, which industries do you think are the next step? For example, healthcare, which is so interesting for RegTechs because it's very regulated. Which kind of industries do you think are very interesting for RegTechs?
There are already some massive businesses outside of fintech that are kind of regulatory driven. Look at Bureau Veritas or the kind of testing industry. There you have to ensure that the different mechanisms of testing metals or drugs or pharmaceuticals are approved, right? The whole pharmaceuticals involves ensuring that regulators can approve drugs that different medical equipment manufacturers ascertain different levels of production. I think if you go through property industry in terms of the fire standards or properties not collapsing, you know, it's kind of every dimension of human life involves some form of regulation. In terms of I guess there's legal tech, which is more around document automation and management. But I think there's this interesting intellectual juncture between legal tech and reg tech in terms of the enforcement, management, and stipulation of different laws and ensuring the best outcome for society linked to that.
Interesting. And now we put legal tech into the conversation. And if we can, we defined RegTech. On the other hand, we talk about legal tech. Is this similar, or should we separate that? What is your opinion about this?
Yeah, I think in terms of like, if you're a venture capitalist, then or if you're an entrepreneur, right? Then you want to understand who you're selling to. And if you're in reg tech, you're probably we're selling to the Money Laundering Reporting Office in the UK, the BSAM also in the US. There's a person in the company who you're selling to. If you're legal tech, you're selling to in-house legal firms, you're selling to law firms, right? So there's a useful intellectual distinction there in terms of like, who's actually going to buy it. So I think large different people. We don't really sell to lawyers per se. I mean, perhaps we do, but like, I think fundamentally, legal tech is about document automation, life cycle management of drafting, accelerating ability to process sales contracts. So again, like overlapping Venn diagrams, but very different dynamics and personas.
Oh, thank you. We talk about the pharmacy industry. And just imagine you have the opportunity to talk with the CEO of a huge pharmacy.
AstraZeneca.
Yeah?
AstraZeneca or like Pfizer.
Yes, or Novartis or Pfizer. We have many pharmacists, by the way, but you can talk with a CEO. And he gives you the opportunity to tell him what is RegTech and which field you should do something. What would you do? I mean, you have one opportunity to talk with the CEO of a pharma industry.
So speaking selfishly, I'd probably say, listen, you have thousands of suppliers all over the world. How do you know which ones of those are linked to like North Korean drug companies or linked to different supply chain issues in West Africa, whereby you're taking like blood diamonds or you're involved in deforestation? I think a huge issue for drug companies is the ESG and supply chain management. So that's probably the conversation I'd have with them.
Very interesting. But the CEO is very interesting. And he wants to do and ask you, how do you do that? I mean, it's difficult to get that answer. I mean, it's a really interesting business case, use case, what you told us, how you can do that. Oh, because it's impossible, almost.
It does, what's the most effective way to look at supply chain and kind of different businesses in terms of the risks?
Yes. I mean, how we can think about supplier checking. I mean, pharma industry have a lot of suppliers, sub-suppliers, and you have to check that. And how would you do that? And more, how you can say, in a digital way, because we know there's a lot of risks and we need risk assessments, but can check that. I mean, it's difficult. That's the question.
What we do is we build a database of every company in the world, and we look at the kind of shareholders, directors, and then we build a risk of everyone that's high risk in terms of linked to human trafficking, money laundering, but also any terrorist activity. We built a kind of taxonomy of 20 different types of crimes, but also we have the data from the companies. So we can build a kind of graph of saying, okay, this person is a shareholder in this company. This person is linked to a terrorist group or is on a board with a person who's a human trafficker. You also have to deal with a key problem, which is the ultimate beneficial owner. So the kind of, it could be that the parent company is a shell company in the Bahamas and you don't know who actually owns them or controls them. So, it's basically about finding the underlying truth of the supply dynamic and trying to expand details of the shell companies, see who actually owns them, who actually controls them, and are they bad? So, but then also adverse media mentions of, is this company involved in burning forests in Malaysia? Is this person involved in dumping chemicals and rivers, all the things that will be front page news, we have to hunt down and attack. Otherwise, people will be able to run rampant and destroy society and the environment.
That's really cool. But I think very interesting. As a CEO, I would say, Charlie, we should talk about to the next step.
Yeah,
absolutely. Question also might be, what do you think established companies do in this area? Or what do you think established companies do better than RegTechs? I mean,
there are a lot. So, I mean, at least for us in our space, I'd say they do better on branding, as in people know them already and they trust them. So we had some work done just looking at perceptions of us versus our competitors. And in the product, like, we're kind of light years ahead, right? Like, the technology's better, clients like it more, but the issue is just trust, as in we didn't exist 6 years ago, and therefore it's like, listen, I've never heard of you. So and that's partly why we raised $50 million in July, is it's just brand, right? So I think incumbency has its advantages in terms of the fact that you exist means that you must be great. But actually, at least in our industry, and the reason why I started the company was because it was terrible and there were too many false positives, too many false negatives, and I can think of a way to solve that. So I think the kind of trusted brand thing is very hard to overcome.
What can you learn from RegTech? I think it's very interesting topic, and what can the established companies learn from RegTech companies, for example, or the customers? I mean, it's very interesting what you told.
I think at least for us, with our competitors, what we see is that, or at least when we talk to people who work there, it's kind of, they kind of complain about like how impossible it is to get anything done and how slowly the companies move. So, and I think, you know, we now have 250 people. So I think the key thing is speed of decision making. I think you look at Amazon, they still manage to move very, very quickly, even though they have how many hundred thousands of staff. So I think the real challenge is organizational design and decision making and keeping management flat and like, you know, be careful that when you fight with monsters, you don't become a monster yourself, right? Like, I think you don't want to end up becoming the very thing you sought out to destroy, because the same organizational dynamics overwhelm you. I think people who start startups are kind of very good at getting something off the ground, but then managing a big company is also very challenging, right? So I think, I think it's a whole new skill set. And if you wake up and you've got teams all across the world, how do you impose discipline? And is it possible to have a simple model that can scale rather than being like much more lethargic as you grow bigger?
Mm. If we think about the topic RegTech industries and we are going to the future, what do you think RegTech do better in 5 years, or are RegTech worse than in 5 years?
I think from my vantage point, what we're doing was, in terms of like building a database of high risk entities, was done manually. Or at least they do it with people. So the people manually extract information and try and build profiles. What I saw was that the pace of innovation in machine learning, cloud technology, the reduction in costs in storage and speed of processing power, meant that suddenly it was possible to do that automatically. I think as labor costs increase and as the speed of processing of computers increases, then you'll see a wave of automation. So things which are done manually will get automated. The complexity and sophistication of algorithms will improve. And also SaaS business is just like so huge and so profitable. As in the markets for software are suddenly much more global and much bigger than anyone thought they were. So therefore, I think, you know, there's this Andreessen Horowitz software eating the world principle, and that's turned out to be true. As in, like, tech is everywhere now, and that will only become more and more true as everything improves.
Thanks, Charlie. What do you think can technology help on the battlefield of compliance? I mean, we're talking about RegTech, and what do you think can technology help on the battlefield of compliance, for example?
So, I guess if I talk about the machine learning dimensions of things, mm-hmm. I'll just refer to three different areas where it can help. So, I guess within fraud, fraud's really easy because you have true positives, as in if I steal your money, then, you know, it's very obvious that the money's been stolen, and you can say, okay, and then if you get like out of 10 million transactions, you get 10 thefts, you can say, okay, I have 10 true positives and they're all from Nigeria and they're all done at midnight. And therefore you can just block those transactions. Right. So, that's called feature extraction. So where you have true positives and fraud, it's very easy to do feature extraction and therefore block the different areas. If you look at, say, computer vision, you can look at passports and you can extract the different licenses, and you can say, okay, this one's fraudulent because this hologram isn't functional, right? So, and then finally with natural language processing, you can extract text, you can decompose it into different parameters. You can say, okay, this is a verb now, and then you can apply rules. So you can say, messy terrorize the defense is fine, but messy as a terrorist is not fine. So, I think tons of practical ways you can do stuff.
That means technology helps on the battlefield of compliance. You would say yes.
Technology, absolutely, yeah. I think technology is the only way. It's kind of like a no-brainer, right?
But what is your view on the fast-changing technology landscape into this world? I mean, I can remember my old Amiga Plus, for example, and nowadays it's changed dramatically.
Yeah.
And what is your view on the fast-changing technology landscape into this world?
I think it's great. I think, like, back when we were allowed to travel, I did the Singularity University course. So we all went to this airfield in San Francisco, the Moffat Airfield, and you have like 2 weeks of courses with like Ray Kurzweil and lots of futurists. And I think just that's why it's just so fascinating, is because I think particularly around energy now, I think what you've seen is the cost of batteries and solar power and wind power decrease so much that suddenly you can create green hydrogen, and therefore climate change should be a solved issue, right? You're going to see so many huge shifts that benefit society and the economy that I think... The fun thing about technology is that it's often hard, and it's hard to know which technology will win out. And therefore, particularly within investing, it's partly an art form, partly a science, to kind of understand which companies will do well, which people will do well. But yeah, I think it's fascinating and very addictive.
Perfect. But I think this is also something I think established companies struggle a little bit with the fast-growing technology. That's true? Is that you're what you get? Or is that the reason why companies should work with RegTechs?
I think a lot of big banks and big companies really struggle. And that's because they have very old systems, or they have crappy decision-making frameworks driven by committee, and it takes years to get anything done. They might have a kind of system from the 70s processing something. They might have bought 50 companies to gain scale, and therefore they're all different platforms. So I think with those kind of companies, often it's just easier to destroy the company and start again with a startup rather than expect them to catch up, right? So I think technology is like an existential threat to them, because their core platform is rotten. They haven't invested. And they can't migrate, they can't change, they can't improve. So, whereas if you have a kind of evolvable core that can shift and improve and iteratively become better, then the 1% daily compounding will be of great consequence at the end of the year.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, we just came to almost to the end, but two questions more, or three. What would you do if you were not working in the RegTech industry?
I'd start another company.
I know that, but which area? Do you want to tell us?
I think the interesting area right now is like batteries and solar power and wind power and hydrogen. I think like you saw this Nikola company, right? Like, you know, there's a company with like nothing and suddenly they're worth $100 billion, right? And that's because I think Tesla is now worth more than BP, Shell, Exxon combined, right? I think if you want to save the world and if you want to have a real impact, then there's all kinds of that technology is changing very quickly, and I think things are possible now with battery prices where they are and with energy prices being generated so cheaply, then, like, you know, electric boats, electric planes, replacing the entire fossil fuel infrastructure with hydrogen is going to be quite cool.
But if I ask you, which company would you like to work for one day? I mean, you have the chance to work one day for a company. Which company would be that for you?
I think probably something like, you know, OpenAI or DeepMind. I think AI is also very interesting, right? So I think any company doing something cool there. I mean, I think Combined Vantage, I think, you know, we're also trying to be the best at AI as well. So if I couldn't work at Combined Vantage for some reason, then I try and do something else within AI.
I think we talk about companies, and in personal question, who would you like to have a cocktail with? I mean, which person do you want to meet?
I think people who like think a lot, I guess. I think, like, I don't know, Napoleon or von Moltke, or like, you know, someone who's like obviously has some strong ideas about the way, yeah, like, I think in terms of the books you can read, I think the best ones are biographies, because often they'll like take you through that person's intellectual history and what the ideas they believe, and I guess like any interesting historical figure, right?